Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza, working on this pre-recorded program via remote in Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Wednesday, January 26, 2022. Sudanese authorities detain aid workers in the capital, Khartoum.
They were detained in the jail of the police station, and it was very shocking for them because they did not understand why they were arrested.
And a South Sudanese lawmaker is defending a decision by the national parliament to increase salaries of lawmakers from $23 to $2,000 per month.
So I may expect that if people are well paid, if actually they motivate them some well, and all the other people are motivated well, it might positively affect the productivity of the people.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The French aid organization Doctors Without Borders has condemned the detention of its medical staff in the Sudanese capital, Khartoum, earlier this week. An official for the group in Paris says Sudanese security operatives detained 9 of its staff early this week in Khartoum. Michael Atit reports for VOA from Khartoum.
Michel Le Charité is the head of the emergency department of Doctors Without Borders, known as MSF. He confirmed some of his medical workers were detained Monday at Al Joda Hospital in Khartoum shortly after leaving the facility. He says security forces interrogated and later released the MSF workers without charges. Speaking to South Sudan in Focus via WhatsApp from Paris, Le Charité expressed concern over the safety of his staff, who have been supporting health services in Sudan for years. He says 3 doctors, 2 nurses, and 4 non-medical staff were detained.
They were detained in the jail of the police station, and it was very shocking for them because they did not understand why they were arrested. There is no physical violence during this detention against them.
Le Charité says the MSF management is shocked by the incident because all the staff had legal work permits from the Sudanese authorities.
Our medical action in Sudan is based on only one thing. Where there are medical needs that require treatment, we do medical activity. So we are very surprised and shocked about this detention, and we consider it unacceptable.
Al Joda Hospital in the south of Khartoum has treated protesters injured during the pro-democracy demonstrations. Le Charité says MSF leaders are worried about the safety of their workers at the hospital.
The security of our staff is one of our priority. We negotiate our presence in our hospitals, in the hospitals, and we have all the authorization with the Sudanese authority. That's why we do not understand this detention.
He says the organization is neutral and does not side with parties in conflicts. He says Sudanese authorities must ensure the safety of MSF staff and other health providers during the political crisis in Sudan.
MSF treats the sick and wounded according to the severity of their problem, not according to their belonging to any group. We call for the protection of the medical mission of all hospitals and medical organizations.
The Sudanese Doctors Association said the detention violated the human rights of patients and medical staff. Pro-democracy protesters continue to reject the October 25th military takeover and demand the establishment of a civilian-led government. Activist groups have continued to organize demonstrations against the military rule despite the use of force by security forces. According to the Doctors Association, nearly 80 protesters have been killed and over 2,000 injured since the military takeover. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
Still in Sudan, some Sudanese public health experts suspect a recent wave of respiratory infections that has swept across the country is related to COVID-19 and possibly the Omicron variant. They advise the public to adhere to COVID-19 preventive measures and get tested when they get severe symptoms. Nabil Biagio has more from Washington.
Hiba Muhammad Ali, a preventive medicine specialist at Sudan's Minister of Health, says This latest wave of infection started with the onset of the cold season in December and early this month. In the first 2 weeks of January, Sudanese social media buzzed with the phrase al-iltihab al-haim, meaning the spreading respiratory infection. Hassanin says while most people treat the current wave as the regular flu, there are strong indications it might be Sudan's fourth wave of COVID-19 and most likely the new Omicron variant.
Most people who got tested were positive for COVID. But as you know, most Sudanese don't go for testing, especially those who have been vaccinated. They feel immune to the virus. And even if they get it, they believe they are on the safe side. But the symptoms are the same in all people who get the infection, and they don't look like the symptoms of the first original COVID. We thank God that this time around, for example, when I got the infection myself, the fever lasted for a day or a day and a half, not more than that.
She says while the symptoms of the current infection sweeping across Sudan mimic those of COVID-19 that was detected in the country nearly 2 years ago, they are milder and last for a shorter time while the infection rate seems higher. Similar findings have been reported in other countries. Hassanin says protests and public gatherings because of the political upheaval in Sudan have contributed to the rapid spread of the infection.
We advise people to observe the same COVID preventive measures. And what it's worse is that the protests and public gatherings have contributed to this widespread of the infection. As the Omicron started to spread around the world, people in their millions were gathering and protesting. And in a span of 15 days, it was difficult to find a household in Sudan that does not have someone who is infected.
Amsterdam-based public health expert Elhadi Osman points out that the authorities in Sudan have not released an official statement or guidance to the public on the current cases in the country.
At the moment, it's difficult to make to draw any conclusions because so far there is no exact statement from the government of what this might be. But in my opinion, there are three different possibilities. The first two are COVID-related. So it's either an original variant of COVID-19 case, and this is supported by the fact that now doctors and lay people are very familiar with the classic with the classical symptoms of COVID-19, and given the increased number of hospital cases related to respiratory symptoms, it might be an original variant of COVID-19.
Osman says it could also be the Omicron variant of COVID. He points out that only a small percentage of the population is vaccinated against COVID-19. He says the country lacks the resources to conduct a thorough laboratory investigation to determine the type of infection that's spreading. He says while it is possible it could be the seasonal flu, pneumonia, or any other respiratory infection, the public is advised to take the same protective measures.
From a medical perspective, the treatment of COVID-19 and flu is somehow similar. I don't think antibiotics work on the viral infection itself, but patients are advised to take rest in their beds and to stay rehydrated, to drink as much water as possible, and to take items that are rich with vitamin C, if not the vitamin C tablet themselves, they can take lemon juice or orange juice or even like regular oranges, but to avoid as much as we could the antibiotics because it might put them at the risk of an antimicrobial resistance in the future. Okay. If that's not a bacterial infection.
Osman and Hassanin advise people to isolate when they get the infection to protect others and to get tested for COVID in the case of severe symptoms. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Washington.
Still on COVID-related issues, a new vaccine has entered into the pool of shots against COVID-19. This one aims to reach low- and middle-income countries where vaccine access has lagged behind that of wealthier countries. But it's not clear what role it will play in the evolving pandemic. VOA's Steve Barragona has more.
The new vaccine, developed at Baylor College of Medicine, is 90% effective against the original COVID-19 coronavirus and 80% against the Delta variant. Data on Omicron is coming. The vaccine is also cheap, refrigerator-stable, and easy to manufacture in developing countries, says team co-lead Dr. Peter Hotez.
So when you start going down the checklist, this checks all the boxes for what you need for a global health vaccine.
Hotez and colleagues use the same old tried-and-true technology that they've used to develop vaccines against neglected tropical diseases, those that Big Pharma is less inclined to treat, because that's what's most available to vaccine makers in low- and middle-income countries, he says.
That's why I was so disheartened at the beginning of the pandemic when everyone was focusing on new technologies. I knew that would be a barrier to access.
Wealthier nations poured money into making new technology vaccines. Now about 80% of people in upper-income countries have been vaccinated, but only about 10% in low-income countries have. And Hotez and colleagues are making the vaccine available without patents. He says intellectual property rights just get in the way during a global crisis.
If your house is on fire and you can only have time to make one phone call, you don't call a patent attorney, you call the fire department, and we're the fire department.
The Indian government recently authorized the vaccine, and Indian company Biological E is making hundreds of millions of doses a month under the name Corbevax. Companies in Indonesia, Bangladesh, and Botswana are planning production too. But it's not clear whether Corbevax will hold up as well as the new technology vaccines against the Omicron variant, says Johns Hopkins University vaccine expert Dr. William Moss.
The Sinopharm, Sinovac vaccines, those are an older technology. They are not doing well against Omicron. Very much reduced vaccine effectiveness.
Global supplies of other vaccines are improving. The United Nations-backed COVAX program recently delivered its 1 billionth dose. Big drug makers are promising billions more doses this year. And other new vaccines are entering the market. But if it holds up against variants, a low-cost vaccine like Corbevax will still be useful, because COVID-19 will be with us for years to come, Moss says.
We'll be kind of transitioning into this kind of endemic mode and more routine vaccination, and that's where these vaccines may play a role.
Experts say a regular shot against multiple COVID-19 strains could be in everyone's future. The less it costs, the better. Steve Baradona, VOA News.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Coming up, a South Sudanese lawmaker says he has the right to increase his own salary. Find out why after the break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
if you could be famous, what would you like to be famous for?
I don't know if I want to be famous for anything in particular, but I think being famous in a way that is beneficial to other people, say be famous for having like a really solid foundation that in turn inspires other people to also give back.
I would like to be famous for inventing new things, coming up with new and innovative ideas.
I'd wish to be a vibrant politician in my country, and I would wish to be known for being a very good politician.
I would love to be famous in the sector of acting, like as an actor. I'd love to be an inspiration to others. Yeah, I like to inspire people.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA health correspondent Linor Mudu. During this pandemic, the World Health Organization and Africa Centers for Disease Control say if you have a fever, a cough, or have trouble breathing, you should stay home and contact a healthcare facility. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest health news.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Some residents affected by floods in Tweech County of Warrap State say they are surviving on sales from firewood after their livelihoods were destroyed by floods late last year. Some women say majority of men in the area have abandoned their families and moved to neighboring Sudan in search of better life, leaving women and children to shoulder family responsibilities. Viola Elias visited the area recently and has this report for VOA from Juba.
17-year-old Mayik Mayik says the devastating floods that hit most of the Upper Nile and Bahar al-Ghazal made life difficult. He says the water level has gone down and now he is able to work in the market to provide food for his family. Speaking through a translator, Mayik says before the floods engulfed the area, he went to school but he dropped out to help his mother. He says his father traveled to Sudan in search of work.
My father is not here. My father has, due to the stress and due to difficulties of life, he packed his bag and he went to Khartoum. Now we are living here with the mother, but the father is already in Sudan.
Mike says the floods destroyed his family's home and he wants to earn money so that he can put a roof over his siblings' heads.
I know young people like me are also experiencing the same stories or the same things in other from other states, and like them, I'm also requesting if they could resume to the schools. Maybe if some of them have dropped, if the flood is over, let them resume the schools. Because like me, I stopped because life was hard. My mother could go to the market to work, and I fear to go to school because if I left the young ones, they could easily drown.
Teresa Nyariak, a mother of four, lives in a neighbor's house because hers was flooded. She says her life will never be the same. Speaking through a translator, Nyariak says unlike other women in the community, her husband is around but spends his days in the market without supporting the family. She says her family survives by selling groundnuts in the market.
Due to the weather change, the way of living and what you do for the daily living will change. We were affected. I have nothing to, I don't have a job or something to do, but what I do to help my children, I just go and buy the groundnuts and I green it and do the groundnut butter and I sell it in the market. When it is bought, I now come and buy something and feed my children.
Lo Mayen, who also has four children, says she thinks there are other women who face the same challenges. Speaking through a translator, Mayen says some husbands abandon their families because they are ashamed. She says life is not the same for her and her kids.
To remain alone without the father of your children staying with you, you struggle with the children alone. Taking them to school, they come back looking for what to eat, paying the school fees, the clothes, and other basic needs. So it has not really been an easy thing for us, but we cope on because there is nothing to do about it, because we have brought them into this world. And there's no need to run away from them.
Some parts of South Sudan experienced floods in June, swallowing up homes, farms, and markets, especially in the Greater Upper Nile and Greater Bahar al-Ghazal areas. The UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs says more than 850,000 people were affected by the flood, and about 35,000 people have been displaced. For VOA News, I am Viola Elias in Juba.
Some South Sudanese are expressing mixed reaction to the country's lawmakers' decision to increase their monthly allowances to $2,000 from $23. Some activists and economists say the increment will encourage lawmakers to hold the executive branch of government accountable. For VOA News, Wake Simon Wudu reports from Juba.
Members of South Sudan's National Legislative Assembly passed the pay increase bill on Monday. Ahmed Morjan, an economic lecturer at the University of Juba, says the decision to improve the welfare of the lawmakers is long overdue. He says the skyrocketing cost of living in the country has affected the purchasing power of the people.
Well, I believe, you know, it is a kind of motivation. You know, any government worker or any worker in any sector, you know, once you are not materially motivated, I think your production will not, productivity will actually be low. So I may expect that if people are well paid, if actually they motivate themselves well, and then all the other people that are motivated well, it might positively affect the productivity of the people.
Morjan calls the increment realistic, adding it will encourage lawmakers to play their government oversight role to ensure transparency and accountability. The national legislature has 650 lawmakers. The increase in their salaries will cost the government $1.3 million a month. Despite the rise, the South Sudanese lawmakers remain among the lowest paid in the region. According to Kenya's Star newspaper, Kenyan lawmakers work home with an equivalent of $7,000 a month. Ugandan lawmakers earn around $4,000 a month. Philip Anyang, a South Sudanese policy analyst and a human rights lawyer, has a different view on the new bill.
It's very shameful to see our parliamentarians rushing to passing a bill that look at the interests, that look at the benefits. They've shown us that these people are heartless. They've shown us that they're shameful. They've shown us that they don't care about the interests of the public. They've gone ahead now to look at what suits the interests. We said last time that this parliament is not for public interest. It's not for South Sudanese. It's a parliament that has come in to help beneficiaries of the peace agreement who are themselves the MPs.
Anyang says the lawmakers have not done their job. He says there is a backlog of legislation awaiting final decisions.
We have bills pending in parliament. No one is talking about that. We have the peace agreement, the permanent constitution making process. No one is talking about that. These guys have shown us that we don't have a parliament. It's a parliament of people without constituencies. These are MPs that were brought in by the peace agreement. They don't have where they come from. And that is what they've shown us today. They've shown us yesterday. This thing is condemnable. And if we have a government, the government should ask for this thing. Civil servants themselves, they should come out and question this thing.
Lawmaker Paul Yuani Bonjo says currently members of the National Assembly are paid 9,470 South Sudanese pounds, an equivalent of $23 a month. Bonjo says the bill was passed to put the National Legislative Assembly closer to the level of other countries in the region when it comes to pay and allowances given to lawmakers.
The amount is rather too small. That's why this bill is passed actually to alleviate, you see, the rates that the honorable members are getting, at least not to be actually together with the region, but at least it's a point of a start or a starting point.
Bonjo says the lawmakers have not yet started on a bill that will address the welfare of civil servants in some government sectors, including the security forces. The new bill has to be signed into law by the president. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
Cameroon and the Federation of African Football have ordered investigation into Monday's deadly stampede at a stadium hosting a match for AFCON, the Africa Football Cup of Nations tournament. The crush of fans trying to enter Olembe Stadium to watch a match between Cameroon and the Comoros overpowered hundreds of police and left at least 8 people dead and 38 injured. Moki Edwin Kinzika reports from Yaoundé.
Confederation of African Football CAF President Patrice Motsepe announced the suspension of matches at the stadium at a press conference Tuesday in Cameroon's capital. Before the deadly stampede at the Olembe Stadium Monday night, Motsepe said many irregularities were observed with the organization of the match between Cameroon and Comoros. He noted the stadium received 1,000 more fans than the CAF had authorized.
There was an abnormal number of people, including those who didn't have tickets. Thousands of people, more than what was expected, did arrive in a manner that is not properly coordinated and governed. I went to see where the people lost their lives. And you see, it's a gate, and that gate was supposed to be open, because if it was open, they would have walked through, and it was closed for inexplicable reason. If that gate was open as it was supposed to, we wouldn't have had this loss of life.
The CAF had authorized the stadium to receive a maximum of 40,000 fans in the 60,000-seat stadium for matches of Africa's top soccer tournament, the Africa Football Cup of Nations, AFCON. But Cameroonian police said more than 57,000 were at the stadium Monday night after fans pushed their way past security, leading to the deadly crush. Despite the tragedy, Motsepe said the AFCON championship would continue. All matches scheduled for the Olembe Stadium would instead be played at Yaoundé's Amadou Ahidjo Stadium. Meanwhile, the CAF and Cameroonian authorities have launched investigations into what caused the deadly stampede. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
That's all we prepared for you this Wednesday. We now end this show with Emerson and the song Tutu Party.
They watch like a bottom step and die. I see short skirts, hey, a mini skirt. Oh, who's one for dance with when his party goes that? I want Saleh, yeah, I want ballet.
What you want?
Makale, and the party back me a
overload.
Not to your business, but in a party you come. Left me make an overload if we at you gonna do. Oh, 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 yeah, yeah. Deserves a body, every man deserves a lady. Come tutu party, oh no. Come jam, shake your body. Come show me, say you savvy. If you really ready, oh no. Before you even start the party, check for G-string or bikini. If not that man, then ready, oh no. Come see tutu, so jam and so we.
We've been listening to Emerson and the song Tutu Party. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for taking time to be with us. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you're in public places to protect you and others from getting COVID-19. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there's no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
If you see me, I'm on sexy, beautiful lady. No, for say, I did my tutu party. Yeah.